Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
Good morning and welcome. It is Monday, April the 29th, 2024. I don't know what it's like where you are, but it is glorious here. I am looking for a sunny day this week. Of course, local elections all around the UK, including the London mayor, and the sheer volume of leaflets and flyers through our door this weekend is just extraordinary. They're all desperate for our vote indeed. So on today's show, we'll look at what the House of Lords can do to prevent an attack on our civil liberties. As new accusations about Hugh Edwards comes to light, we ask, what is the lasting damage to the BBC? And we'll hear about the prisons where the guards have basically lost control and it's now effectively being run by the inmates. So I hear that the Contaminated Blood Inquiry is due to report its findings in May. This cannot come a moment too soon, frankly. This has been going on for decades. We now see that stories are appearing in mainstream media of people's desperate struggle to be heard. And I have a story about contaminated blood. As I say, this has been going on for a very long time. The inquiry itself was announced in 2017 by then Prime Minister Theresa May. For those who are unfamiliar, let me tell you a story that is beyond the wildest imaginings of even so-called conspiracy theorists. 10 years ago, plus, I was contacted by a number of people, including Glenn Wilkinson from the Contaminated Blood Campaign Group. They told me a story that, frankly, I struggled to believe. They claimed that thousands of people had been infected with hepatitis C and HIV as a result of receiving contaminated blood or contaminated blood factor products imported from the US, including from heroin addicts and people with HIV. These were distributed to patients by the National Health Service throughout the 1970s and the 1980s. It was estimated in the UK alone that more than 30,000 patients had received this contaminated and infected blood, resulting in the deaths at minimum of 3,000 people. It was happening all over the world, from Canada to Australia to Iran. But in 2014 and 2015, no one, and I mean no one, wanted to listen to these people. The problem was the government in the UK certainly didn't want to know, because it was the same government with the same party who had permitted innocent people to be given blood products that could kill them in the first place. So it was that I arranged for a small camera crew to go to David Cameron's constituency office with campaigners. And it was around, I think, spring 2014. So probably about 10 years ago, almost to the date, I should imagine. We got there and David Cameron refused to see them. This was absolutely devastating for them, because amongst their number were people who were actually dying because they had infected blood and they didn't know if they'd ever be able to get to tell the Prime Minister what had happened to them. So I said to them, what do you want to do? And Glenn Wilkinson, who was leading the campaign, said, I want the Prime Minister to receive all this literature that we have collated. He held up this huge volume of documents that they'd pulled together. And I said, well, that's easy. I know where he lives. Let's go. And we went to David Cameron's house, as you do. And we had a face-off with his armed guards, who told us that no, we would not be leaving the literature there. And we went backwards and forwards, and I pointed out to them that in many respects they were no different to the Nazi guards, and that this would come back on them eventually when the full story of contaminated blood was known. Anyway, we walked away from them, we walked down the lane, and I said to Glenn, sod it. We are putting this literature through David Cameron's door, whether he likes it or not. And here's a little clip for you to see us doing just that.
Okay, I make no apologies for being angry with these men. It's exactly because of people like that that many millions of people die in heinous situations throughout our lifetimes, decades before us. We're going to need these papers regardless of whether they take them or not. I'm sick of all this official office nonsense. And so we're going to wedge this in David Cameron's door, and hopefully it'll give him plenty of things to read this weekend, you know, while he's hunting and shooting, eh?
Yep.
The best I can do. And that was such an important moment for us because Glenn and I, we had a cuddle, which you didn't necessarily see. And the police kind of came out of the driveway and they looked at what we were doing, but they didn't stop us. And then there started to be some sort of movement for the contaminated blood scandal. And then David Cameron was out of office. Theresa May was in. She announced the contaminated blood scandal inquiry. And now we hear that ITV is due to make a drama documentary about it after the great success of the Mr. Bates versus the post office. This will be the official narrative. There won't be any mention of David Cameron refusing to meet survivors or the scandal of what happened with the contaminated blood campaign group. But those who know, know. And now, as I say, it's due to report its findings in May. And yes, I'm absolutely glad that the inquiry happened. Yes, I am sad that some people will not be around to find out the findings of that. And yes, our government really did buy very, very sick and contaminated blood and gave it to people, including children, and it killed many people. And put it this way, if there isn't an active depopulation program actually in progress, then it sure as hell looks like it. And on that note, let's find out from Gemma Cooper about the UK headlines.
Thanks for listening to us. Now we want to listen to you. Our lines are open from the US and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And of course, those are our phone lines. Please feel free to call us. Our question of the day is, as Ireland discusses emergency legislation about sending migrants back to Britain, should Britain then have the right to send them back to France? We put that question out on X. And as you can imagine, the responses are coming in thick and fast, which we will get to shortly. But first of all, good morning, Gemma Cooper.
Interesting editorial there, Sonia. If ever there looks like there was a depopulation agenda, you know, you can only go by the facts, can't you? You can only go by how things look and what actually did happen. And some of the headlines that came out of the inquiry so far about one of the doctors, especially injecting a little boy, I think it was, with the blood. And he didn't have to. He just did it because it was cheaper. I think that was one of the facts that has come out. And there's all kinds of horrific, you know, monumental horror stories about health. You know, once again, the very service of the very people that are supposed to protect us and look after us and do no harm are doing exactly the opposite. You know, it's difficult not to have a conspiratorial hat on, isn't it, when you look at the fact that all that blood was bought because it was cheap. There we go. That's the bottom line. It was cheap. Simple as that.
It's important for us to reflect on it as well, though, Gemma, because it's happening all over again with mRNA. And that is the reality, is we have to be absolutely aware of these medical scandals that are taking place. And sometimes it absolutely is only about the money. And Gemma, you're right. The blood was cheap. They were buying it from drug addicts, from people who had HIV. Just, you know, horrendous. No actual care and concern for anybody involved in the process. So, yeah, absolutely horrendous stuff. Gemma, what's going on with the UK headlines?
Well, quite a lot. One of them is the question of the day, actually, of course. You know, Ireland saying it's not going to take any more refugees or asylum seekers that come across from the Northern Irish border, which is open because of post-Brexit wrangling. So they're saying anyone that comes in via Northern Ireland, which is effectively the UK, into the Republic of Ireland, will be sent straight back to Britain. They're not going to deal with any more asylum seekers. Ireland's imploding over immigration at the moment. So ministers were due to meet today from Ireland and the UK to discuss this very issue. Last night it was announced that the meeting has been postponed, but maybe it will be reconvened for later in the week. It's that hot a topic. So it'll be interesting to see what reaction we get for your question of the day. Also, First Minister Humza Yousaf, he's the gift that keeps on giving, Scotland's First Minister. On Friday, he resolutely said he would not resign after breaking his power-sharing agreement with the Green Party, which has left the political situation in Scotland in chaos. Today, it looks like he's considering his position and is likely to go. Who knows? Who knows with this one? It's a good distraction technique, though, I know that. But also a story that affects everybody here in the UK, new border charges on imports from the EU on food and animal products are set to be introduced tomorrow. Industry experts, retail experts are warning this could lead to food shortages and empty supermarket shelves. Does that sound familiar from the last 4 years? It certainly does to me.
We're caught in Groundhog Day. Let's have a closer look at that one, Gemma.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, it's got the potential to affect everybody here in the UK. It's called the Border Target Operating Model. Again, it's to do with all the rules and checks that have come in since Brexit. And it could see EU imports coming into the UK, food imports, animal products, cut flowers, things like that, subject to stringent health checks to see if they meet new regulations now that we don't trade freely with the EU. Some charges could cost up to £145 for people trying to import their goods into the UK. The industry experts are warning those costs are unsustainable and will absolutely be passed down to the consumer. Or alternatively, EU business people will just stop. EU businesses, especially local artisan producers, will just stop trading with the UK. It'd be too expensive for them. Therefore, we will start to see food shortages on UK shelves. There's been a lot of wrangling about this, these new laws and rules over imports into the UK. The charges come into force tomorrow into Dover, arguably the biggest port in the UK, and also anything coming in via the Eurotunnel. Toing and froing, excuse me, and wranglings from January onwards because people just couldn't agree on these, but they do come in tomorrow. So it's kind of with a knock-on effect. We're heading towards a bank holiday. Will we start to see food shortages that quickly? One industry expert said the policy looks like it's been constructed on the back of an envelope. Typical Brexit wrangling, actually, but certainly warnings. And this, I covered this story earlier in the year when they were wrangling and you're trying to agree on the charges, trying to agree on what would be checked, what wouldn't. Quite a lot will be checked actually coming over. There were warnings then that EU producers would suffer and the UK consumers would suffer. Certainly the charges have to be paid, and then that somebody somewhere has to meet that cost, and it is likely to be the consumer. So they all come into force tomorrow. Let's see what the knock-on effect is on our supermarket shelves.
Oh my gosh, are we going to be fighting over loo rolls just like we did before during COVID? Because the problem is it kind of sets you up into an almost panic, doesn't it? Even hearing about it, you already feel, oh, I need to go out and stock up. And I just wonder whether our life is just one stream of chilling effects after another, Gemma. We hear these headlines and we're automatically put into a certain gear of survival. And I am deeply concerned about it. So what is the, presumably this is as a consequence of Brexit. Is it not?
This is a consequence of Brexit, yeah, and not one that anybody in the UK that voted for Brexit would possibly want. But of course, the problem with the UK is food. We don't grow enough of our own food. We don't. Farming is almost non-existent now. Interestingly enough, the television celebrity Jeremy Clarkson, who kind of like controversially went off and bought a farm after his TV career kind of stalled a little bit. There's headlines from him today saying that he can't make ends meet with the farm if he didn't have other television work to fall back on. He just couldn't do it. He said it's easier to take a government handout and do something else with your land than it is to grow or farm in the UK. Now, you see, if you look at the wider picture, this is all part of a kind of deliberate ploy to make countries reliant on foreign exports, which then can't, you know, you can make money out of the foreign exports coming across the border. Will this start with EU regulations because of Brexit and end with everything that comes into the UK? And because we're so desperate for food, we don't grow enough of our own, we don't farm enough of our own. You can argue that's by design. This will be the thin end of a wedge that grows and grows and grows. And then effectively, we are in that kind of hunger game situation. Now, that is a bit conspiratorial, but certainly UK farming is in a terrible state. We have covered that story extensively here on TNT. You know, farmers protesting in the UK, which they have been, is not a done thing. Farmers aren't known for being radical, but they've taken to the streets, as we've seen. So food is a huge issue for the UK. So to have any type of shortages or any type of costs passed to the consumer when already the money in our pocket is not going far enough because of the so-called cost of living, whether that's deliberate or just, you know, one of those things, inflation. It's a worrying thing. But again, it's this priming of the last 4 years, isn't it? Food shortages, and we're all on high alert because we saw it firsthand. And we saw what happens to people when suddenly there's no tinned tomatoes on the shelves, most of which come from Europe. You know, we saw that. And people go mad, don't they? They go mad, that scarcity mentality. It's enough to trigger some very strange behaviour. So yeah, headlines like this, they fire you up, they make you behave in a certain way. But these charges are coming in tomorrow. Now we could be panicking for nothing. It might be fine. It might only be a very certain local targeted artisan people that, you know, won't affect a wide range of food products. We just don't know yet. I think it's one to keep an eye on because it does have echoes of the last 4 years. As you say, immediately you want to stock up. But we'll see.
But also, isn't this a warning shot to us to be better producers again? We were at one stage great at industry, and that's been completely depleted. So much of British industry has been depleted. And surely it's time now for us to have a reemergence on the world stage to be able to supply this for ourselves. This has to be a warning shot, surely, that we are just relying on so much coming into the country rather than self-producing.
Absolutely. It is a warning. But of course, British farming is completely beleaguered. And because of cheap imports from the EU, farmers are saying, we can't make ends meet here. Yes. We just can't cover farming costs and we can't take a living wage. And that story hasn't been resolved. We've covered the farmers' protests here in the UK, as there are across Europe. Every farmer is facing the same situation. Funny that, isn't it? You know, it looks like a bit of a lockstep there. But it's certainly this issue of food, this issue of we don't grow enough, how difficult it is anyway as an individual now to grow your own food, how difficult it is to get an allotment, which is a plot of land away from your home in the UK where you can go and, you know, have a shed and some land, a small piece of land, and grow your own food. Waiting lists are at a record high, and there's hardly any land now for allotments. A lot of land goes over to building. And also, you know, potential laws coming in about what you can and cannot grow in your own garden or backyard. They're not introduced yet, but there has been talks about that too. Now, maybe this is something that we'll see more in the next 10 to 20 years, but certainly, yeah, farming in the UK won't be helped by this, because even if the imports don't come in, say they stop trading, we're not going to be able to suddenly replace them with stuff that our farmers produce, because farming's on its way out. Unless we see changes in EU laws to help our farmers and an end to red tape. It's all a mess with our food. So, yeah, if you can grow a little bit in your backyard, I suggest you do it now. Stock up and freeze it. That's kind of the message.
Yeah, absolutely. Pronto. Gemma, we'll see you in the next hour. We'll be right back.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
All the focus of the West, of Washington and its allies, are all focused on Israel right now, to support and help Israel and to somehow contain and deter Iran. Okay. So that means that Russia kind of has an open field with regards to what it wants to do. So think about that for a moment. Could we have a situation in this new world, this multipolar world, where the Iranians and the Russians, they're allies, and certainly Russia's not going to slap Iran on the wrist for this latest salvo against Israel. Why? Because it absolutely ties up the United States and its allies right now in the Middle East.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT.
Potential delays for the morning commute. In other news, a recent government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate mouth.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats.
It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom. And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Now, the UK government may soon have the power to snoop into your bank account and those in receipt of benefits, even when there is no suspicion of fraud. The Data Protection and Digital Information Bill has been passed by the House of Commons, is now going through the House of Lords. One of those members of the upper chamber who will be opposing it is Lord Prem Sikka. Good morning, Prem.
Good morning to you, Sonia, and to your listeners.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's so vital to hear what you have to say about this. This bill scares the life out of me. Am I right to be scared?
Yes, we should all be scared because the government is taking powers to snoop, as you said, on the bank accounts of anyone who receives that Social Security benefit, and that includes the state pension. And you won't be told that you're being snooped upon. No court order is needed for snooping, and you will not know how the information is used or abused. Indeed, you will have absolutely no right to find out anything about it. And at the very least, probably 40% of the UK population would be directly affected. In addition to that, if your, for example, housing benefit is paid straight to the landlord, then the landlord and all his or her bank accounts will also come under scrutiny. If you are receiving a benefit and you happen to run a small business, then that business account will also come under surveillance. And if you are a treasurer to the local bowling club or line dancing club or whatever, and you sign the checks, then that club too will come under scrutiny. So we don't actually know how many millions of bank accounts and how many billions of transactions will actually be subject to surveillance, but it is at a huge scale, unprecedented in Western history.
The government are selling this on the idea that it's really important that we amend existing laws and be able to keep up with AI and digital technology, etc. But what is this really about, Prem?
Well, the government's official explanation is that they really want to curb fraud on the benefit system. But then you ask the government for numbers. For example, I asked, tell me what is the fraud level on state pension. The government can't give us even one number. Then we refer to Social Security benefits, and the government says that the benefit fraud is running at about £6.4 billion a year, which is roughly 2.7% of the total bill. And the government's estimate is that if all this mass surveillance is implemented, this will save about £100 million a year. Now, put that into context, in the last tax year, the government has spent £1,200 billion. And now they are saying that this mass surveillance will save £100 million, which is very, very insignificant. But people being snooped on without any suspicion of fraud, it is very strange. You know, Sonia, when people are honest, well, when they hit the age of 66 and are ready to claim state pension, government assumes that suddenly they're going to have a genetic change and they're going to become fraudsters. That is just nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. This really is surveillance state with bells on, isn't it? And the thing that really concerns me, Prem, and I think concerns you as well, is given the far-reaching nature of this, there is so little coverage or so little awareness of what is actually taking place.
Well, that's right. And it is going to be very, very serious. I have met some groups representing disabled people, and they are very concerned because their landlords are already hinting that they will have to throw them out if this becomes law, because they don't want their own bank accounts to be snooped upon. And the only way to get around it is to create another kind of a homelessness crisis. So it is very vital. It is very serious. And the government is really unable to answer any questions. That is what I find most puzzling. In the Commons, they pushed through this bill, which has been passed, with very little scrutiny, because they have a huge majority. In the Lords, they are the biggest group, but they don't control the House. Therefore, we are able to probe what the government wants to do. So it is a very, very serious matter of concern, and this will create all sorts of crises. The other thing to bear in mind is that the majority of the individuals who are going to be affected are going to be women, because women are the majority pensioners, and women also the more women claim Social Security benefits than the rest of the population. So this is really institutionalizing discrimination on the basis of age and gender, and it is completely contrary to Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. And this bill is bound to be challenged in the courts if we are bludgeoned into submission by the government and the Lords, because this bill does not really withstand any scrutiny.
This, as you've pointed out before, this has almost kind of a sort of sense of a Dickensian time. This appears to be an attack on the most vulnerable amongst us. We're not snooping in the bank accounts, for example, for MPs or bankers, are we?
Absolutely right. Obviously, the Lords has a large proportion of senior citizens. We would be snooped upon. But the government is not taking powers to snoop on the bank accounts of tax dodgers, money launderers, people who overcharge the NHS for drugs. There are companies who have committed frauds. We've been hearing about the PPE scandal, for example, where people have obtained money through fraudulent means. They will not be snooped on at all. If you just look at the tax numbers, HMRC's own admission is that each year it fails to collect about £36 billion of taxes due to avoidance and evasion. And who are the people who craft those schemes? Accountants, lawyers, bankers, they will not be snooped upon. It is the ordinary person. So when the government says this measure is needed to combat fraud, I don't believe a word of it, because they're not really going after the professional experts really at all.
And that the truth is, we already have existing law, don't we, to be able to track fraud in terms of benefits?
Yes, we do. Since I think it's about 2001, the government has taken powers to obtain information from banks on a case-by-case basis where there is suspicion of fraud. And HMRC, for tax purposes, already gets information, for example, about people's bank interest. And HMRC can also request information on a case-by-case basis. But what we are talking about here is mass snooping. You know, and how many millions of pounds will banks charge for this trawl through information? We have asked the government that question, and they've been unable to answer that. So you wonder whether, you know, how many millions of pounds extra profit are banks going to make out of this? And the worst thing is, bearing in mind the post office scandal, the assumption here is that whatever the computer system in the banks generates is correct. And you won't even know how that information is used. The only time you will know is when a letter arrives from a Department of Work and Pensions to tell someone, well, their pension is being stopped or their benefit is being stopped. Otherwise, you will not really know. And the worst thing, there are many other civil liberties aspects. Imagine somebody joins a religious organization or a trade union, which somehow people in power don't approve of. But looking at your bank account, they will know that you're a member of perhaps a proscribed organization. People are entitled to a certain level of privacy. That is how the world develops. You know, you can imagine early Christians opening a bank account and the Roman Empire finds out, hey, you're contributing to a local Christian organization, therefore you're guilty. I mean, this is where we are heading, really.
It is indeed. Listen, Prem, we're so grateful for you joining us this morning. Please keep us updated. We know it's at the report stage right now, but we do truly appreciate you demonstrating this incredible pushback against this draconian bill, the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill. Everybody, this is Lord Prem Sikka out there fighting the good fight for all of us. Have a good Monday, Prem. Take good care of yourself. We'll be right back.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Uh-oh. Scandal. Huge news.
This is very important.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister has been accused of abusing his power after allegedly gaslighting a woman and making her cry at a national rally against domestic violence in the country's capital. There are renewed calls for the United Nations to lead an international investigation into the bombings of Russia's Nord Stream pipelines. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has been accused of lying to the public by downplaying the true extent of his country's military losses.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
And a reminder of our question of the day, as Ireland discusses emergency legislation about sending migrants back to Britain, should Britain then have the right to send them back to France? And as expected, it's got you talking out there in Tinternet land. Floa says a better discussion would be how to deliberate and influence government foreign policy so that migrants are not driven from their country by colonial wars, destruction, instability, corruption and poverty. You would be serving the nation by educating them and not misguiding them. Noted, Floa, noted. And Teresa says, what's the real root of the problem? Until we can start to openly ponder these issues, people will continue to be dehumanized in ever more horrifying ways. Dare I say, even the bloody Nazis tried to keep their evil out of plain sight to some extent. Don't sit on the fence, Teresa. Right, I am delighted to be joined by my next guest. Hugh Edwards, of course, who isn't my next guest, was allegedly warned by the BBC about his online conduct 2 years before the scandal that saw him accused of paying a young person for sexually explicit images. The newsreader resigned from the station last week, but how much lasting damage has been done to the broadcaster over its handling of the affair? Well, joining me with his thoughts on this is media commentator Nigel Paul. Good morning, Nigel.
Morning, Sonia. I'd be worried there when you said you were being joined by Hugh Edwards.
That would have been great, wouldn't it? Hugh, Nigel and I have a few questions for you. Right. Yes, that would be absolutely... No, he seems to have sort of disappeared, Nigel, and we're hardly surprised about that.
With his mum in Wales.
Yes, just like Philip Schofield, there might be a pattern here. Philip Schofield ran back to his mummy in Cornwall. There might be a pattern. What do you make of this whole affair and how it's been handled, Nigel?
It's not been handled very well. The BBC are not very good at handling issues and dealing with issues. They tend to, flag them out. We saw it with the Martin Bashir incident. But television in general, Philip Schofield, I just mentioned it, on ITV. There is very much an attitude of protecting the institution and protecting powerful individuals. And Hugh Edwards, the most powerful newsreader in the country, royal events, elections, the Queen dies, it's Hugh Edwards. He was the go-to, £439,000. Not sure what that is in Aussie dollars, but probably over 500,000, I would think, if not more. So, very, very powerful figure. Now, the BBC have lots and lots of complaints and lots of people writing in, as I'm sure your radio station does. And occasionally, there are people who like radio and television, and they're slightly out there. But serious complaints. And it's clear in this instance, and not only do we have the incident of the sexually explicit photographs and the £35,000 payment to the young person, but there was issues with the internet 2 years ago. Now, this seems to me, reading between the lines, which as a former Fleet Street journalist, I got very good at, that wasn't just the case of sending an email to Sonia and Sonia sends me an email back and we discuss, what's your favourite football team or cake. For someone to actually complain, they either felt personal, I don't want to say this, but they were being encroached upon or there was something unpleasant or something to worry about. Because why else, if you're just interacting with someone, why do you have to make a couple of complaints about it? And then someone gets warned about their conduct.
So, and it continues. BBC, and it continued.
And it continues.
There's an arrogance there, though, isn't there, Nigel? There's an arrogance. It's like, I know I'm just kind of hypothesizing here, but it's almost like you can't tell me what to do. I'm so powerful. I am the all-seeing newsreader.
Well, I know a few people who work at the BBC, and I know that it seemed that he was the godfather of the newsroom, this man that everyone looked up to. Not quite the case. In actual fact, like a lot of people on television, I'm sure you're not like this. They are very self-obsessed. And what you see on television isn't what you see off camera. It's very often people are very different as soon as the cameras come on. It appears that probably Hugh wasn't averse to being slightly different off screen. And slightly, I guess if you're the most powerful newsreader in the country, you do have a certain arrogance. But that's fine. But when it impinges, the BBC last week, and let's bear in mind, it was his wife who actually... sort of outed him in the end and came out and said, this is my, it wasn't press, it wasn't him personally, it was his wife Vicky who came out and finally said it. the BBC said that now he's signed and everyone can move on. Family of the young man can't move on. The young man who was, you know, obviously having serious mental issues since this and had other issues.
And an alleged crack addict on top of that. Alleged crack addict.
So that was the problem that the family had, that they felt that the money was being, you know, used and they were trying to get him off drugs. So I don't think the family have been treated very well. There's always the small people who are victims.
Yes.
And in this instance, Hugh's out there, you know, and he will keep his head down. He'll probably end up doing charity work in Wales, I would think, saving the porpoises off Colwyn Bay or something to try and re-ingratiate himself.
So is that the way back for him, do you think, through the charity route? Because it's not like it hasn't been tried before, Nigel.
Well, that is the tried and tested route, isn't it? At the end of the day, you can either brazen it out. I mean, I've got a feeling that, you know, Donald Trump would try and brazen it out, for instance. But in general terms, I know that you have this in Australia and in America. There is a certain amount that if you've done something wrong, we're slightly different in Britain, actually, funnily enough. We do like people like Profumo to go and do charitable work or voluntary work. And Aitken, these were two MPs who were disgraced, for Australians who don't know, many years ago. In America, what they like is a big television with opera, or in Australia with you, Sonia. And
I'm not in Australia. You do realise that, don't you, Nigel?
Oh,
I'm in Southwest London.
I'm in Southwest London. Well, that's a bit disappointing. I'm talking.
I'm so sorry about that. I'm so sorry. It doesn't feel half as glamorous, does it? I know. I get your point. But here's the thing, right? So is there no way back for him other than like through charitable concerns? Because it's going to be terribly embarrassing for the BBC, isn't it? Having to play future clips with him. I mean, you know, he, you know, was the voiceover, obviously, for the coronation, for the Queen's death. Right. How are they going to be able to use those clips in future? That's embarrassing stuff, isn't it?
If you notice that we have Top of the Pops and certain DJs had to have had their careers and images and lives slightly unravel. So they are either not shown those whole episodes or bits of with them in it are cut out. Now, you can hardly cut Hugh Edwards out from the coronation or other areas.
Right.
So
right.
He is going to be around. I think Philip Schofield has kept a very low profile now for getting on for a year, I guess. And, you know, he's quietly rebuilding his life. Hugh Edwards is an intelligent man. He may even write a book. Who knows? He could write some sort of mea culpa in book form. I doubt that, personally. But, you know, he could spend his time doing something. He might just retire. He's got a £4 million pension. He's got a big pension pot, and he's in his 60s. So he might well just take it easy and keep away from it all. I think the thing with him was dealing with big occasions. If you're dealing with big events, it's a bit like being a footballer who rises to play in a big game but doesn't like playing on a cold Tuesday where it's somewhere horrible.
Yeah.
You do wonder whether the adrenaline of announcing the Queen has died isn't quite the same as sort of a skateboarding dog, you know, a couple of weeks later or whatever.
No.
So I don't know whether there's an adrenaline rush. And it seems to me that he liked living on the edge.
Yes.
Living on the edge of, if you're sending emails and Instagram stuff to people with at QBBC, then you're not exactly hiding your identity.
No,
It's not like Harry 765000 whatever.
Right, exactly. It's the blatant nature of these people. But he is not the first BBC bod to have been caught like this. He certainly won't be the last. But Nigel, just tell me, how can the BBC keep recovering from these scandals? Because they all seem to be very similar. It's almost like there's a pattern there, right?
Well, they keep recovering because they have a license fee that goes into them every year, about £170. And if it was a commercial operation, they would have shareholders to answer to, and they might well pull the rug, as has happened with commercial operations. The BBC know it's going to get £3 or 4 billion from the taxpayer next year for its license fee. Therefore, there's no incentive for it to learn any lessons other than, so we're going to move on and it won't happen again. And it always happens again. It happened with Bashir. It happened with everyone. It'll happen again. They can't help themselves.
No, they, and that's exactly it. I'm beginning to wonder. The jury's already out for me. There's a culture at the UK, at the BBC, and we all can see it. Nigel, thank you so much for joining us this morning, everybody. Media commentator Nigel Pawley telling us exactly what he thinks about Hugh Edwards and the scandalous BBC. We'll be right back.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming, keep coming, keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
You're with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, joining me for a round of today's big stories is Danny Bampin. Danny is an entrepreneur. He's a former independent local councillor. He's somebody who has great knowledge of common law, if I remember correctly. Danny, welcome to the Sonia Poulton Show on TNT. How are you today?
I'm good, Sonia. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you. Good to see you too. Now, migrants are heading to Ireland because of the threat of Rwanda. Ireland wants to return them to Britain. Britain says they will only accept them unless the EU recognises the UK's right to send them back to France. Danny, what's going on here? What? Tell me your thoughts.
Well, it's like a big circle, isn't it, really, when you think about it? But I think ultimately the key is that the UK, like I watched an interview with David Cameron the other week, and he was saying that we can't send them back to France. And I'm thinking, why? And what are the consequences if the UK just send them back to France? That's my solution to this, because what would the UK do? We get fined? Ooh, you know, what's the point? I think the immigrants have worked out. If they go to Ireland, they can stay there. Yeah, and there was a court ruling recently, I think, in Ireland as well, where basically they were saying, we're not going to send them back to the UK because now the Rwanda policy is in place and that legislation is there. They determine the UK is not a safe place for immigrants because of the Rwanda policy. Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And so the problem is, Danny, of course, this is not an ideal situation for anybody. People are genuinely, legitimately concerned about the fact that there are fighting age men arriving exponentially on small boats. That is a concern to people. And even people who are okay with immigration are having a problem with that. But there doesn't seem to be any decent solution. And when we asked our question of the day, a number of people have said we need to look at the source. What is going wrong? What is the UK's contribution to these countries that is forcing these people to leave their home countries? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's down to what is an illegal immigrant and what is somebody seeking asylum. And it's hard to determine who is who, isn't it, really? I mean, that's one of the biggest problems I think we've got is, like you say, we're being flooded with these people, but some are genuine asylum seekers are seeking asylum, but others are just illegal immigrants and seeking whatever they want to do. And there's been so many cases of people coming into this country and raping British girls and things like that. And you just think, well, he was only let in last week, and now we have to pay for him to be in jail. It doesn't make any sense.
It is problematic. Like, for example, you use the word flooding, which I would never actually use. And the reason I wouldn't is because that is very much a sort of far right expression. And it, what it does is it dehumanizes people. And I really feel we need to find some humanity in this. But again, completely acknowledging people's fears. And it's almost like the indigenous population are being ignored, right?
Correct. Yeah. And that's why it kicked off, if you like, in Ireland last week when I saw all the clips on social media. Yeah, and you can see that that's going to happen here soon. It already has, and all the hotels that have been taken over by, you know, the immigrants and stuff, and the government housing them and all that money in the hotels, and you just think, this is crazy. And then you have people like John Mappin down in Cornwall, who the government offered to, we'll fill your hotel up for a year or two, and we'll pay you in advance. And he went, no thanks, I'm not getting involved with that, and good on him. And we need more people to stand up to the government to say, we're not having this. That's the problem, is what you allow is what will continue, isn't it?
Absolutely. Do you feel that this is a globalist agenda? Because it does appear that there is lockstep happening all over the world.
Yeah. I mean, you look at America and stuff, and that's why they're so desperate to vote Trump back in, because they know they'll stop that happening. And Biden is all for that because he wants the votes, because anybody who's coming in is likely to vote for Biden, and it's tipping the edge, isn't it? And then you've got the Ukraine, you've got Israel and Hamas and all that stuff, and it's kicking off everywhere, really, when you think about it. But I think what's coming is the one thing that people aren't focused on is maybe a financial crisis where the US dollar collapses and stuff like that. I think that's the one thing is sneaking up on us, and that's what's going to change things drastically, in my view.
What about the British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak? He's having a bit of a ropey time at the moment. It would appear that the knives are in his back. We've had ex-Health Minister Dan Poulter, who has defected to Labour. Mm. Tory MPs getting restless. It looks like Penny Mordaunt, Bill Gates' mate, is set to take over. But what are your thoughts?
Well, Roland Wright, I don't think many people like him, do they, really? But, no, I think ultimately it's the Conservative Party again playing, I don't know, musical chairs with their leaders without anybody actually, if you think about it, we're not voting them in. It's just done within the Conservatives. And that's why I think the general election is going to be really interesting, because I think Labour are going to get in, but I think there's going to be a big swing for other parties, maybe Reform get a few seats and maybe some independents get in. I think a lot of people are fed up with party politics. Certainly, I have been fed up for a decade with party politics, which is why I set up the No Party to support all the independents. And I'm not standing this in the local election on Thursday, because in my ward in Plymouth, there's no election because there's only two councillors.
Right.
Otherwise, I would have stood again to be an independent councillor. But I hope people do realise that they exercise their vote on Thursday and maybe vote a different way.
Well, so Rishi has come out swinging, obviously. He was totally behind that Rwanda bill, as you know. And in terms of him, do you think that what is happening with the migrants now going to Ireland, do you think that this is a win for Rishi? Does this suggest that his Rwanda bill is working?
I think he was right in the way that he said it acts now as a deterrent, which it clearly does. But I think also it's caused a problem, obviously, because them going over to Ireland and the Irish don't want them and they want to send them back to the UK and they can't. I think it's putting pressure on the EU to be able to say, OK, you can send them back to France, because the whole thing is just nuts. And when you look at what are the consequences, if a couple of boatloads came over and we determined that they're all illegal immigrants, send them back to France, and the UK did that, what would be the consequences? I don't understand what the consequences are. So I'm going to need to look into that and find out. But yeah, Rishi's on borrowed time now, isn't he, really? Like you say, Penny Mordaunt's probably going to take over. But they're going to get hammered at the elections. That's why Dan defected to Labour, because he knows now he's probably got a safe seat now, you know, just by doing that.
Cowardice move, then.
Yeah, of course. They do it all the time. I mean, you look at Richard Bingley, the council ex-council leader who chopped the trees down in Plymouth. He was Conservative Party, then he went to Labour, then he went to UKIP, then he went back to the Conservative Party.
Oh, my days. You can't trust somebody who does that, can you? I mean, I struggle to trust politicians at the best of times, but somebody who flip-flops like that, because basically they're flip-flopping because they want to be a big cheese, don't they? And they feel that they're not getting the recognition that they want in the party.
Exactly. And when you look at how he did that, and, you know, he got elected as a UKIP councillor down in, and he was doing it in different parts of the country. That's the other thing. So he's moving around and then comes down to Plymouth out of nowhere, and the Conservatives put him up and he gets elected. Crazy, crazy. Charlatans,
absolutely, which is why we need more independent councillors. Absolutely, we do. And skipping over to Scotland, Hamza Yousaf is not having a great time. Oh, I heard that sound in your voice there, Danny. What do you think about his chances of surviving past 4:30 this afternoon?
I was going to say, be gone by 3 o'clock, I think. So, I mean, yeah, he's on borrowed time again. And obviously, that's all connected to the SNP and all that stuff and what they're going through. And it just shows you politics. One day in politics is a long time, and I don't think he'll be there by the end of today. There's too much pressure on him now. Yeah,
I mean, who's going to replace him? I mean, because obviously the whole SNP is in absolute chaos. Obviously, Nicola Sturgeon's gone, her husband was arrested, and then the Hamza Yousaf came in with his ridiculous hate crimes update, and thousands are completely overwhelming the police forces. They were ill-prepared for it, and multiple complaints about Hamza Yousaf himself. So his term has not been successful thus far, has it?
No, I mean, he's barely been in there a year, has he, really? So, it's just crazy how it's going to change again. But, you know, it's hopefully it'll be somebody who really knows what they're doing, because there doesn't seem to be many people on that side of the house that do know what they're doing, to be fair. Maybe George Galloway. I mean, George Galloway back in the House of Commons.
Oh, George, dear Lord.
That's a fresh air, isn't it?
Can you actually imagine George Galloway taking over the SNP? I literally can, you know. Oddly enough, I really can. But is there anybody, though, are there any leaders that you could actually, like Keir Starmer, for example, right? I mean, the chances are that he is probably going to win, but he seems to be deeply unpopular. I'm a former lefty, right? Politically homeless these days, but there's no way on earth that I would have voted for a Keir Starmer. He is absolutely not coming from the left.
Well, no, he's controlled opposition. That's what they call it. He's controlled, you know, and that's why he's being rewarded now for what he did when he ran the CPS, just like Cameron was rewarded with what he did with Carlton TV. And actually, those two things are connected via a documentary that was made about exposing the paedophilia within a parliament and the royal family, which David Cameron bought the company that made that documentary, and it got shelved. Never got broadcast. And Keir Starmer was involved with making sure that that didn't get out, because obviously it would have exposed Jimmy Savile.
I mean, I have to say, Danny, just because I understand how the legal system works, and as somebody who made a film called Paedophiles in Parliament, that is a story that's never been fully confirmed, because I tried to confirm it about that, because I've heard that story as well. And I know that was to do with Carlton TV, right? That's what
we're talking about. When Cameron was the boss.
Yes. Yes, yes. But there are issues, obviously. We know there are absolutely issues. Let's read some comments. Trust me, Danny, not one single one of them in Scotland could run a raffle, says Shug. And Shug is from Scotland. And that is the problem, is that we are systematically unimpressed with our political representatives, because a lot of them represent WEF or Israel or Ukraine. Is that your kind of thought process as well?
Yeah, of course. And this is the thing, is that ultimately, when you vote for somebody who's part of a party, they're there for their party first. They're not there for the people first. That's why it's so important to vote for independent candidates. And that's why, if you look back in history, Parliament was actually built for independent candidates. You know, the Tory party came out of, we've got the remembrancer opposite the Speaker in Parliament, the unelected member who's there for the City of London to make sure that the monopoly of their money creation is not affected. And that's why the Green Party is really interesting, because the last 15 years, they've had in their manifesto a pledge to remove the remembrancer. And you remove the remembrancer, you give the government control of the money supply, and then the government don't borrow it off the banks that created our fresh air. And that's why they brought in the parties. So the banks control the parties. They still do. Till today.
Many people have no idea about these archaic traditions that take place and what hinges on them, right?
Correct. And this is the thing, is imagine a parliament with 650 independents representing people and not representing a party.
Wow.
getting rid of the remembrancer and then being in control of the financial money supply and the money creation. So you imagine if the government was able to pay all the public servants through money creation that it had. Does that make sense? Yeah, the government are in control of the Bank of England. You're going to get paid through money like created out of fresh air, like it is with a mortgage. Yeah, the world would be a completely different place. And, you know, like we know, mortgages are created out of fresh air.
Exactly. Danny, thank you for giving us a vision of a better tomorrow. That would be lovely. I like all of that. We prefer that greatly. Everybody, thank you so much, Danny. Danny, you and I have had this discussion before, and that is often there's a confusion, isn't there, between Danny Ramplin and Danny Bampin. And I know that the other Danny gets it as well. No, this is absolutely Danny Bampin, entrepreneur, somebody really understands about common law in very fine detail, and a former independent councillor, which clearly is at least part of the way forward. Thank you so much, Danny, for joining us this morning. We will see you soon. Have a brilliant Monday. And don't go anywhere, of course, loads after the 9 o'clock news. So stick with us and we will be right back.